approach will be to just ask a few questions, particularly when I find the ones here in a moment that I know I saw. And then there will be an opportunity for people to ask questions afterwards. So I guess to get the ball rolling, I'm going to offer to you, Sam, I'm going to talk a little bit about the expectations that you see of GE in the manufacturing role, because if you can just outline for the audience some of the huge manufacturing capabilities that GE has and how that would fit into what would be important in Phil's vision.
Cool, thanks. Listen, GE has been a company that I couldn't help thinking for when you were giving your presentation about the this industrial age, and we've been there through that entire industrial age, and we're very much trying to pivot to become what we call an industrial, a digital industrial company, a company that can basically take physical assets, largely without steam usually, turbines, generators, jet engines and the like, and mold them with big data, predictive analytics and the like. But so we've got our finger in a number of pies, whether it be healthcare, whether it be aviation, renewable energy, in fact, we're so absconced in power, there isn't an electron in Australia that doesn't touch a piece of GE-Kill software. So we've been here for 100 plus years and very much embedded in places that most people don't realise. I think a lot of people see GE sometimes as being a good manufacturer making toasters, but there's a fair chance that it's going to hop on an aeroplane, or in fact, a 70% chance that you'll be flying with a GE jet engine. Our engines are taking people from Perth to London, and we'd like to take them from Sydney to New York at one point as well. But for Western Sydney in particular, we've had a range of people back from head office, for want of a better word, who are incredibly excited about what's happening in this part of the world. And in particular, in regard to additive manufacturing, 3D printing, this is going to be an incredibly disruptive technology we already use within GE to help build components for our jet engines. And we've gone, in some respects, from components that required several suppliers. Those suppliers no longer are part of the equation. We print those products, we put them in our jet engines. It's incredibly disruptive, but it's also an incredible opportunity in terms of building an ecosystem with researchers, with universities, with vocational education and training, with material scientists and the like. So it's quite as you said, Phil, technology doesn't create the jobs, it's an enabler. What's important, and I see this in Sydney, is the skills base. If you get the skills base right and you can utilise that technology, it becomes a vehicle to leverage opportunity.
Thank you. And so I'm now going to pass to you, David, because it's a little bit of context. LA Services is running out of resources. They've got about 35 people right now. I guess I'm interested to hear about your challenges as an SME in embracing some of these things. You don't have 70% of the jets using LA Services, which would be great. But just take us through a little bit of your personal journey of the challenges you see that we were sharing.
Okay, so I guess a lot of the challenges are some obvious ones around the skills and the trades. Not being at the standard that's required. So I guess deliver a professionalism to what we need to do as we I guess try and connect with higher end customers in oil and gas particularly and those sorts of things. And I guess the skills around those too is kind of being boxed into I'm a fabricator or I'm a welder. Whereas we've found that we're moving to services and stop putting so many things on trucks and looking after pipelines and things like that bring cash to your home. We're moving ourselves in and out of the factory, and that's a requirement then to understand environmental management, workplace safety management, other things. So there's another layer of requirement there. So that's one element of it in terms of just some of the services that we're moving to have been, I guess, easy for us to transfer the skills we had in making our equipment into the field. Which is, again, I guess, the first move of becoming a service business. And the other part is the back of house, I guess, the office space and the engineering and those sort of things. It was very much around, you know, I come to work, I sit at my desk and I do my job, and that's, you know, maybe entering data into a project management system or something materials from what used to be local, now it's offshore. We buy a lot of materials. To a job where you've got to, I guess, work across a bigger picture, and we have other elements of the business. So before, it was very much focused on, you know, what material we needed, how might we design it, and how might we project management. And now it's about, well, how do we kind of tell our story of what we're doing? How do we build the partnerships and the capabilities with people so we can collaborate with universities and things like that? And so all of a sudden, the office staff too are confronted with this massive shift in their role, that they've got to start to be out of the building a lot, having a lot of conversations, articulating questions, sort of learning to ask the right questions. I think there's some of the really fundamental ones we're seeing, is people getting used to being uncomfortable, I suppose. To put it simply, yeah.
So, I think that's part of the essence of change. So, and by the way, this will make sense in a moment. David talks about LA Services based in Brisbane. You are coming from the Western Sydney camp. I think whilst I haven't read the report, I know I should have. I guess I will put the cat amongst the pigeons and say that many people feel that the universities are doing a lot of different things. There's RTOs, there's a whole series of challenges going on. I know the universities are very interested in embracing Industry 4.0 and providing parts to it. I'd like you to take us through a couple of the key points in there, and then question on notice for panel. I'm then going to ask you to react to what's the solution in closing that gap between, because we've got Sam coming over here having an expectation of building a capability that's going to be able to go global with some of the different parts being very disruptive, changing the rules the whole time. And we've got David here who's got a workforce that he's trying to enable to change without having a whole lot of disruption brought on his head, and we've got you representing the universities hopefully closing that gap. So tell us about what you see as some of the secrets of success in that space.
Yeah, look, there's lots of questions in that question. To your point, and especially reiterating what David said earlier, this is what we see as well. In my day-to-day work, I interact with a lot of SMEs and I interact with a lot of businesses. And what I see is, and what we see as a team, is that there was a need for the sector to transform. But for the transformation, what is required is the upskilling and you know, providing that sort of training and support to these businesses so that they can be trained in digital skills, number one. The second thing is providing them with the commercialization support as well. So once you have, yes, there is R&D, and universities can work together with the businesses to bring that core piece of technology to the forefront. But then there's another piece of work in taking that technology and commercializing it. So there's a lot of support that's needed there as well. And the third thing is breaking these silos within this whole manufacturing sector. So all these three pillars have to come together in order to make a difference and make the sector transform. Universities obviously have a key role to play because, you know, we have research capabilities, we have capabilities in terms of providing R&D support and in terms of providing other supports to the industry sector. But I think there are other stakeholders as well that are part of this picture. So the industry, obviously, the universities such as ours, and government has its role to play as you know, and bringing these businesses together with the startups. So the majority of my role is supporting the startup ecosystem in the Western Sydney region, and this is where I have seen a lot happening in the last 2 years, where the startups, because of their agility and because of their core interest and focus on technology, can actually provide a lot of support and a lot of capability sharing to happen within the SMEs and the startups. So the picture is complex, but of course there are a lot of things that we're doing and a lot of things that the other stakeholders can do.
So thank you. So, as I mentioned, David's in Brisbane, LA Service in Brisbane. GE's got a global footprint and will take the best capability anywhere in the world. I guess I'd like each of you to just reflect what you see as the opportunities in Western Sydney and what you see as the two most important things that would be really enabling our economy to make that transition. Tough question, I know, but I'm going to start with David again. Just to say, like, you're in Risby, I can speak from government, we'd love you to do a massive expansion into Western Sydney. It's fantastic. But there'd be a whole series of reasons that why that wouldn't make sense, starting with workforce. So tell me, from your position, from your stakeholders, the industry player here, what would be the things that you see are critical for success in a place which might be Western Sydney, maybe Risby, you can say?
So, yeah, I think kind of business purely, you know, running the business point of view is becoming more educated about running a business, not as like an analyst, but a way, I guess, where you kind of turn up and think, well, what do I do today? I'll go and worry about this or that. But learning to, I guess, think through the future about what's happening and where you need to go. And probably that's a pretty common problem with a lot of small businesses is that I'll just worry about today and you know, next time. So teaching us to, I guess, family business, take the emotion out of the conversation for a start, and then forcing ourselves to think about, you know, where are we really going strategically, and what the hell is the strategic plan anyway? I mean, that's a nice word, but trying to work that out from a small business point of view, doing the same thing for 30-odd years, has been a big challenge. So that's been probably our biggest challenge, is doing that. And once we kind of got our, you know, we're not there yet, you know, we're getting towards it. And I guess, you know, one of my mentors is in the group today, John Cook, spends a lot of time with me over the last few years helping me to tackle this problem and to take the family, I guess, forward in what could LNA be and how could it expand. So I guess the opportunities that we're seeing is that as digital gets overlaid on our products, which is well aware of what we're trying to do with those guys, it's a huge opportunity then to, I guess, have an impact around the sort of jobs and the sort of people that are in those areas. Because, you know, they're often not highly skilled, wealthy sort of people. So it is about, you know, coming to work and doing the job. So the opportunity that we really see is making, you know, far more interesting jobs for people with a lot more meaning. And I think that's really the core for us. And this opportunity that what we're doing with Little Boys High and the internships we've got set up there, it's really showing that there is a potential to make an impact in that space. And from a business point of view, having a social impact is far more powerful than having just purely commercial impact.
So that's the sort of people that you're looking to build and bring forward and be in that space. I'm now going to pass to Sam, looking at you, to give you, now I understand your government background.
Sure.
You know, you're going in, your interest is in investment, in helping,
yeah,
obviously securing support for GE, but there is a third element in terms of the people and the impact and the
absolutely. I mean, people work at GE because they want to make a contribution, they want to make technology to make a difference to people's lives. But just picking up on the earlier points about universities and a great to have Western City universities here, the other issue is still education. In New South Wales, we have more high school students currently doing BE than physics. So that's a pretty remarkable kind of statistic. So I think we need to go back and make sure that problem gets fixed. Nothing against BE, I'm a great admirer of physical education, I support it. But we all do, but we need the STEM capability developed, and that really has to be baked in early on. So that's just a side comment from the commentary you provided earlier. A couple of things that come to my mind. One is governance. What I think Western Sydney has got right is governance. It appears to me, both at a local government and a state government and a federal government, there is a pretty well-defined governance process and planning process. And that helps keep companies like GE kind of understand a pipeline of opportunities. Because we're kind of an entity that, you know, things have to be big and regional to get excited about, you know. That's right. We want to work with companies like yours, but we want to be able to know that there are lots more out there like that as well. So I think governance is an important part of it. The second thing is, and this might be a little strange, but I'll just explain it, and that's government procurement. GE is a company that often, you know, will build a wind farm, will build infrastructure. government's quite right to say, let's make sure we have local content as part of that. And I think that's the right thing to do. We do need local content, local jobs. But there's a difference between CapEx, right, investment in the infrastructure, OpEx, you know, funding that, and then knowledge. And knowledge is actually the most important part of the equation because that's what you can export. And my kind of message to the government representatives here today is, you know, be smart about how the Western Sydney investment rollout, you know, gets rolled out. Don't forget that knowledge element because that actually is the most sustainable. The CapEx element is the great sugarhead and certainly needs to be done, but the longer-term element of this is important. And the final thing with that, I think it's actually important, and you might find this strange coming from a big multinational, and that's actually the social safety net. The risk here is we end up in a situation we're sitting in this room in 20 or 30 years' time, and there's a digital divide. There's already an economic divide to some degree, and I think we've got to start at the very start of the kind of conversation in dealing with the equity components, and that's something that, I was in the States, there were millions of drugs in the States. They're white, they're male. Their chances of being, changing roles are pretty limited, to be honest. We need to make sure that, they come along to the journey too. Now, that could be hard, but if we start earlier enough in the process, I think the equity concerns are real and they need to be acknowledged.
Absolutely. So, time for questions from the audience in a second. I guess I've given you the top challenging questions here. Because particularly I find in my roles in regional, many of the SMEs that are growing aren't university-educated people. They don't look to the universities to be driving. In actual fact, there's an underlying fear. And so there is a real challenge in my mind that the people who are growing a lot of these, particularly metal bashing type businesses and things like that, it's a different place. So I guess one of the challenges I've got for you, and when I was talking with Dave earlier, is you've got these roles that are blending between people who are metal fabricators who may be quite happy with a mobile phone, but there's currently no way of getting them to understand service provision digitisation within that role. So there's this blended problem. So while you think about, so you answer that, I'm going to call for questions from the audience straight after your very short answer. The universities can deal for one sector. What do you do in the broader space as well?
That picture is on the changing. I'm especially in here that we're seeing a lot of new blood coming into the university and that their parents or their families have businesses, traditional businesses, so to speak. So we're already seeing that transformation happening. By no means I mean to imply that we've done all the work that we can do, obviously. It's just a start. Just on the earlier, and I totally agree with whatever you said. I think one key element that we also need to think about is the leadership. So the larger firms and the smaller firms together, if they collaborate and if the integration happens in the right way, a lot of opportunities can be created from that. So obviously leadership today, it's a decentralized model. So universities have their leadership resources for the government and for their students and larger firms. So I think there's a lot in that space as well that we can address.
So I'm going to pass it, I think, Alan. It's all actually going to be this lady over here. But if when you have a question, please stand up who you are, where you come from, so we can understand the motivations. And Alex, take it away.
Alexander Melton, New South Wales Department of Industry. Just with the focus on the two words, Industry 4.0 and the other phrase, Western Sydney, obviously we can't do everything well, so we, we kind of have things that we're better at. In terms of Industry 4.0 and Western Sydney, what are the competitive advantages that this area would bring? So what is it that we're already on the right trajectory or we already do well? So where are we exhibiting strengths?
I think, I think the biggest strength that we have is that there is a very large concentration of small and medium firms in this city, so 8,000 plus firms, as you say. Now, usually when we talk about smaller businesses and medium enterprises, we talk about challenges that these businesses face and the But on the flip side, smaller businesses, my research shows and the work that I've done in the area shows that they are best placed to transform. They've got the, they can be agile, they can make decisions quickly, and if right support is lent to them, then they can have a far greater impact than the larger businesses. No offense to you, but SMEs have a great potential. So I think Western Sydney, with all the infrastructure spend that is happening at the current time, and given the concentration of the businesses that we have and the focus of manufacturing that we have, I think it's a great place to do all the transformative work that can be done.
We have had enough job to be in Europe and America in the industrial age. We're now competing with India and China and Vietnam and the Philippines, with a population that just drowns us into nothing, which means we cannot be a jack of all trades, master of none, like we tried to do over the last century to get that Western Australia. Which means that I think the other thing that's very relevant, when you've got a population of 2 million, 70 to 75% of your jobs are already spelt out for you. The same as any other country, any other region. You've got to have schools, you've got to have roads, you've got to have this, that, and everything else. So the only thing that makes you different is between 5%, and that's what you export is. The rest of Australia grows trees, and that's all you can afford to do, the imports in. Now, that means that you're only looking at it, say, roughly 400,000 people that could be different in the Western Sydney area. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not a big number by any stretch of the imagination. To me, it's going to be how the hell do you get focused? Because there's two challenges with 4.0. For the 75% that you're going to have anyway, hospitals, schools, roads, everything else, there's only one challenge, and that's to be world's best practice in what you're doing. Whether you're sipping hamburgers or teaching somebody kids at primary school, are you up to world's best practice? And are you using 4.0, if you like, digital era to help you do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's the rule for 75%. The 25% is what the hell makes us unique. Now, you can't be unique by tackling 140 million jobs in manufacturing or something. That's just ridiculous. The only way you make it famous is to say, when you use the word Western Sydney to anybody outside that, what's the first thing they think about, or second or third? And if they can't answer that, you're not unique. You're just a geographic area. And I don't think anybody could answer that question at the moment about Western Sydney. They can say Parramatta is their focus point. They can't tell you what you're good at outside. Until somebody can define that for you outside, you don't have any uniqueness. So I think one of the great challenges is not the 4.0 itself, it's what you're going to do that's unique.
Making the choices of what you want to be known for.
Correct.
Are there other questions? There is. Question over here.
Good afternoon, I'm Sasha Alexander from Western Sydney University, the School of Computing Engineering and Mathematics, but also has industrial design, construction management and architecture. What I was curious to bring to the attention is something that we're trying with the students now. We're looking at the Internet of Things, and we're also looking at 4.0, but we're saying when anyone approaches any project, there are new considerations to make in any subject for any project, and in any cross-discipline interaction. So the thought is that this framing of the project mindset is brought to every project. And the thought is that we've tried before is making suggestions to industry is also to have the frequent or periodic diagnostic. As a stranger visited your organization recently, we were finding that when you have a stranger that has a set of expertise that can act as a catalyst for a new thought, a new framing of a project, and that these diagnostics could occur maybe on a quarterly basis. Have you been somewhere else? Have you looked at manufacturing 4.0? We would take the students out to a manufacturer or a company like Rode Microphones, for example, that have a very much an export-oriented mindset, and they also have world-first practice in their product testing and their product evolution and the machinery that they have and how they finance their machinery, for example. So we look at that as one of the exemplars, and also tapping into every graduate's ancillary knowledge that they bring with them. Because we didn't know that students in the class that have an interest in virtual reality. They're actually experts in it, they just didn't have the opportunity to use it. So I think whether it's within one's organization or even joining the organization or schooling those individuals is to have that broader mindset. For 20 years ago, I was designing equipment to work in silos, and I'm knowing that I've moved into academia and encountered a different kind of silo. We're trying to dismantle those as a metaphor. What was good about the silo measurement one was that we wanted to find out the quality of wheat all the way through the silo. So in a way, we have gold somewhere in these silos, which is what I'm bringing up. That's just my thought about what we're up to.
I think maybe that change in mindset is something that David was referring to as well. Are there other questions from the audience? I don't see any burning questions. Sure. We talk about 4.0. It's got a number of elements to it, Tony. And clearly, we know things like analytics and big data. The thing Australia has not as fast broadband. We haven't even got the road. Make 4.0 work. I live in East Melbourne, it's 900 kilometres from the GPO. They cannot guarantee me fast broadband until the 2020s. And I'm 900 kilometres from the GPO. Well, I get it, it'll be 100 metres. 900 metres, sorry. I'm sorry, 900 metres. Well, I might as well be 900 kilometres, actually. I probably might for the first time. Sorry. When we get it, it's going to be maximum 100 metres per second. You go to South Korea and go to a hotel there, you've got 600 megabits a second just in your own room. Denmark can start to 3,000 megabits a second. We don't even have a basic platform for 4.0 operating in Australia. Because our politicians have no damned idea of the importance of the underpinning thing. I mean, even to have connection to the node instead of the house for it. Was one of the previous Prime Minister's fatal mistakes. That's a bit like electricity committed in the 20s, only to the nearest telephone pole, and then give candles and matches to light your home. That's what we've got with England and Australia. We don't have fast broadband. We're extremely dependent on things like 5.0 mobiles and 6. Australia is not even serious about 4.0. We don't even have a road to drive the bloody rest of it along with at the moment. So I think we've got a very serious challenge, in 4.0.
And I think, again, I'm not sure how many people in the room can influence that, but it's not the first time I've heard that story. And there are no further short questions?
Yeah, there is a quick one.
Yep, it's got to be a quick one. But that's not your land down one if it's a quick one. Quick question. Double quick one.
My name's John Cook and I work with LNA Services. Just a couple of bits of information, a statement more than anything, and it comes out of some experience with Western Sydney University. I think it was 2016 that Scott Holmes did some research and presented it to the RBA, looking at small business in Sydney, and discovered that no more than 20% of our small businesses actually want to grow. Problem number one. Okay, Western Sydney also did some research with Blacktown Council. Fairfield, Blacktown, and Bankstown. Some research that came out of that, or research findings that came out of that, found that in that Bankstown area, but I think it was particularly, innovation and expansion was happening in small businesses in Western Sydney only after they reached an age of about 40 or 50 years. So for the first 20, 30 years, they were quite happy to survive before they actually looked at maybe exporting. By then, they would have been through several iterations of management. And that brings me back to a point that comes out of a lot of research. I've done a literature review on this from 1986 that shows we are significantly handicapped by a lack of leadership capability in this country. And the research that I did started with the Australian Manufacturing Council in 1986. It said if you want to join Asia, which was all the talk in those days, you might remember Paul Keating and so forth, we needed to improve our leadership capability.
David Carpen reiterated that in 1994. It was then compounded by the work that Roy Green did in Management Matters in 2009. Deloitte have been reporting this every year for the last 20 or 30 years, and we've done absolutely nothing. Okay, and our small businesses, as managers, they're mostly good cheap metal workers, welders, or panel beaters, let alone leaders. That's a very good point. And so I'd like to say thank you, and I think there's a couple of really critical issues before that. The time has come to actually draw this session to a close. I'd like to welcome Professor Barney Glover to the stage.